Friends, prepare for multi-ball.
Hello, and welcome to Pinball Nerds Podcast, coming all the way from River Hibbets, Nova Scotia, to the holes in the side of your head. Introducing your host, Orbital Albert.
That's me. Welcome back, pinball nerds, to episode 324 of your fifth favorite pinball podcast. My name's Orbital Albert, and on today's show, I couldn't be more excited. I've got with me the number 10 ranked player in the world, whose ranking is about to go up even higher. Welcome to the show, all the way from Florida, Mr. Eric Stone.
Thank you. Thanks very much. How are you doing?
Not too bad, Eric. I know you're still at work right now doing your day job, which most of us who have you on Facebook know that you're a meteorologist. I'm not going to say weatherman because I know, is there some differences there between those two jobs?
Oh, yes. Well, the job is the same, but a weatherman does not have a college degree and a meteorologist does. And I do have a master's in meteorology, so I would be a meteorologist.
Right. And that's what it does say there. So someone doing the weather is someone who maybe does some interpretation themselves, but the meteorologist is essentially like breaking down, like you really have to do the forecasting of it.
Yeah, exactly. When I show up to work, you know, maybe 3-4 hours before my newscast, I'm looking at all the forecast models. I'm remembering the patterns, the different weather patterns for the different seasons here. And, you know, making a forecast based on my knowledge and then, you know, making the graphics and then go on and present the story.
That is so cool. Every single clip that you share on Facebook at, is it Fox News 4?
Fox 4 News.
Fox 4 News. I was so close. I'm up here in Canada, so we don't have a lot of Fox, of course. You know, we've got the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation and the CTV. But, of course, I watch a lot of American television as well. Not so much, you know, the forecast for Florida, because that just makes me depressed up here in Canada.
Well, you know, I grew up in New Hampshire, so I know how you feel. Our weather in New Hampshire is very similar to yours in Nova Scotia. And I don't rub it into my parents' face, but I do let them know that it was, you know, 85 degrees today down in Florida.
Mm-hmm. And what would New Hampshire have been? Closer to where I am, around zero or a little less?
Probably, maybe in the single digits. You may be just a tad bit colder.
Yeah. Believe it or not, well, I'm sure you know this. I'm assuming you're going to your state finals on Saturday.
Yes, that's correct.
The temperature, unfortunately, is like we're getting a, I don't want to use, you know, I don't know the actual name for it, but there's basically a bad storm coming in tomorrow. And the temperature is dropping down to negative 22 or negative 23 without the wind chill and like negative 33 with the wind chill tomorrow night. And so I looked when I wake up, even though it's going to be sunny here in Nova Scotia, I've got to drive across two provinces to the opposite side to get to St. John, because I live in Nova Scotia and I qualified in New Brunswick, and where they're having the finals is kind of the other side, like the furthest place it could possibly be for me. Anyways, driving in possibly 30 centimeters of snow, which is like a foot, you know, for my American friends, if they're not sure in centimeters, I'm sure you know. Yeah. But I mean, just, you know, knock on wood that the car doesn't break down, because not only would it suck not getting to provincials to get to, you know, to possibly be able to represent New Brunswick, it would really suck having to try to, you know, wait for help or flag down a vehicle at minus 30, because that's going to be cold, right? So I don't even know what that is in Fahrenheit, but I'm sure it's cold.
Minus 30 is probably about 22 below in Fahrenheit. Yeah, that's very cold. I'd advise you, if you could, leave a day early.
That is probably a great piece of advice. It would be tricky because my wife and I are going together, and both of our sons are, I trust both of them because Hayden's 15 and Owen's 10, but just them watching the homestead, I'm worried about the power going out, not knowing how to operate the sump pump, the electric generator. They don't really know how to operate the wood furnace in the basement or the pellet stove if the power does go out. So it's like, I really want to go to finals, but I also want my whole homestead and my family and everyone to be safe. So it's like, I wanted to bring both of my boys with me, but basically they have basketball tournaments, which to them are just as important as my pinball tournament, right? So,
right. Now, you know, have they ever postponed a state tournament or provincial tournament because of weather? Is that possible?
I don't know, but me being brand new out here to the East Coast for my very first like big tournament with them, I don't want to be like, well, guys, I think though that they're very, very, Tom MacArthur, who's going to be our TD, is very, very, very fair. So I'm sure that like if some of us are running behind, because lots of other people have to come from Moncton, which is only about an hour from here as well. I'm sure like, and I am going to leave at the break of dawn. Like I'm going to leave 7 hours ahead of time and it's only a 2.5 hour drive. So I'm sure we'll be fine. I mean, I have really good snow tires. I was a driving instructor for years back in the day. I'm sure I'll be fine. What about you? How far do you have to go for your state finals?
So I'm in Fort Myers. I'm in Southwest Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to go northeast of Orlando to a little town called Oviedo, the Pinball Lounge, which is the shirt that I was wearing over at Indus on the final day. It's about 3.5 hours, maybe 4 hours if traffic is really bad, but I can usually do it in 3.5.
That's not too bad. And obviously, you're probably not going to be dealing with feet of snow.
yeah, I think it might have snowed here once or twice ever that we know of. And of course, it didn't stick on the ground. But yeah, it usually doesn't snow here.
If it is snowing in Florida, it's probably at Disneyland in the Canada Exhibition Center, and it's just foam, right? But
that's right. And we do the town of Naples, which is about 45 minutes south of me.
Mm-hmm.
They light a Christmas tree after Thanksgiving, and their big event is it snows because they have the foam blowing everywhere, and it actually looks like it's snowing.
it's like being on a movie set.
Yeah, exactly.
That's awesome. I'll be honest with you. I would love to escape some up here. They call them snowbirds. You may have seen these Canadians. They're a little bit older. They drift around down there in Florida.
Oh yeah. I see them all the time.
And I know there's snowbirds that come from, you know, everywhere in the North, not just Canada. They come from Chicago, of course, the big pinball town, and any of those states that kind of get, you know, too much after 30 or 40 years of doing winters, you know, even, you know, with where you're from, you get sick of it and you want somewhere nicer. Now, let's go back to Indisc and talk about that for a second. Were you shocked that you ended up getting first and second in the classics and then first in the main?
Yeah. I mean, you know, when I look back on it, I think I tell people that know me, you know, I say pinball is much like golf. Tiger Woods is a really good golfer, but you don't always see him at the top of every tournament. You don't always see him win.
Not every time.
You always see different names, it seems.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you still have the group of competitive golfers that finish in the top 25, but just like pinball, it's really, really hard to consistently finish at the top. And, you know, this being a world tournament, it's, you know, it just blows my mind. I was able to take two first and a second. As I'm going along, of course, my goal is to always push myself to try to win, or at least try to get in the final four so I can take home, you know, a trophy. But yeah, that was just incredible with the amount of people there, the amount of world-class players that were playing. And, you know, I don't usually travel that far. I don't think I've ever gone, you know, to Southern California for a pinball tournament.
So that was your very first Indisc and you won main.
Yeah, I know. Isn't that crazy?
Wow. And it's now considered the world championship, right?
Right. Yeah. The Open World Championship, which means anybody can compete. And I believe there were 317 players, many among the best in the world. I think the top 25 players, there were 18, 20 players there.
Wow. I would believe that. There was some stiff competition. And let's be honest, even though I was rooting for you on that on your very last game there, you had to do a little bit of magic on ball three, right?
Well, yeah, I had to do a lot of magic. I tend to play better when I know what I need to do.
Right.
And, you know, Tomcat's a game where a lot of times, especially on that particular Tomcat, which played extremely quickly, you have to kind of budget, like, what are you going to do on ball one? You know, what do you want to have done by ball two? Mm-hmm. I really wanted to have all three locks all set by ball three, and I was one letter away, so that would, I guess, be the next best thing. And I missed a few shots toward the end, but luckily I was able to recover and, you know, finally make that shot when I needed to.
What I think that you excel at really well, maybe perhaps I'm not going to say this definitely gave you the game, because it's your tons of hours of dedication and practice and studying, I'm sure, you know, game knowledge, but you seem to be able to get laser focused, especially at the couple games I watched there, especially in Maine, also in Classic. So you seem to get hyper laser focused, and you were able to just get done whatever you had to get done, any way you had to get it done. It's almost like you were like at a next level.
Yeah, you know, when it comes, believe it or not, when it comes to practice, I don't play pinball all that much besides tournaments.
Really?
Yeah, my work schedule, it keeps me really busy. Mm-hmm. I'm a bowler as well, so I bowl, you know, usually a couple leagues a week. And there really aren't that many public places that are open around, you know, the Fort Myers area that has pinballs. Now, right. we got the Pinball Asylum. Which is going to host the other world championship, the IFPA 17.
Awesome.
But that's a place that's only open for tournaments and once a month for leagues. So it's not like I really have a lot of places to play. When I go to New Hampshire, I grew up right near a place called Fun Spot. Have you ever heard of it?
I've heard people talk about Fun Spot, but tell me a little more about it.
Fun Spot is the Guinness Book of World Record biggest arcade in the world.
Cool.
And I literally grew up within a mile away.
You lucky place. Right. You lucky guy.
Oh, yeah, it was great. So, you know, I played a lot of the 70s and 80s games growing up. My parents bought a Captain Fantastic when I was 4 years old, and that's what I started playing on. My dad used to take me to 7-Elevens, and he'd get a newspaper and a coffee, get me 50 cents. And I go in 7-Eleven and play the old Gottlieb, you know,
yeah,
1980 games. And, you know, when he was ready to go home, I would leave with him. And so, you know, I got a lot of experience on the older stuff. And then when the newer stuff come out in New Hampshire, the arcades didn't really keep up with it. Like the newest game at Fun Spot is Monopoly. And I don't know if that was, I know it was one of the first stirs that come out, but
2004 or something like that.
Yeah, maybe. And the other arcades, you know, there was a Lord of the Rings, a Simpsons Pinball Party, and that was it.
Mm-hmm.
And I moved out to Salt Lake City. I got my master's degree, and there was literally no arcades out there that had pinballs. And if I did find one, they were in such bad shape that it wasn't even worth, you know, trying to play.
Right.
And then, you know, I moved to Florida, and I still didn't really know much about the newer games until I found out about the Pinball Asylum and then found out about tournament pinball. And I worked previously at the CBS station here in Fort Myers.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, new management came in. They wound up letting a bunch of people go, and they let me go. Mm. And so I was pretty devastated, and I was pretty upset because, you know, I knew my talents as a meteorologist, and you know, it was just a bit of bad luck. But if that didn't happen, I probably wouldn't be talking to you right now, because I started playing competitive pinball around the country right when that happened, and happened to win the national championship in 2017. Went over to Denmark, and you know, the rest is history.
So around 2017 is when you really started to take this serious.
I would say, let's see, I got laid off the middle of 2016.
Mm-hmm.
So, I went to what we call the Florida Ape. It was the Arcade Pinball Expo.
Mm-hmm.
In February 2016. I was still working, but, something happened to where, and I work weekends, so that makes it hard to play pinball. Something happened to where I had the weekend off. I was able to play. And I remember I played against Bowen. And I came in second. I came in second in the Classics and second in the Main. And I thought, okay, well, that's not bad for my first, like, really big pinball tournament.
Wow. No, that's awesome.
And then when I got laid off, I went to Free Play Florida, and I wound up winning Free Play. And I thought, wow, this is really cool. I qualified first for the state of Florida. So I think back then the state finals were in February. I mm-hmm. played that, won that, and was able to, you know, go 19-0 in the national championship. I lost one game and then won the 20th game against Zach Sharp, who is an amazing player.
Right.
And that really started everything. Then people were kind of like, oh, who is this guy?
Where did this guy come from? Like,
right, exactly.
So was that your biggest win until recently, or was it, I know you got like sixth, I think, at Pimberg also last year or 2 years ago?
Yeah, two years ago, I came in fifth.
Fifth, yeah.
And Andre Massenkoff beat me on a tiebreaker of Ali. Oof. If you know anything about Ali, you need to have a good first ball and a good second ball because your multipliers hold over, things hold over.
Mm-hmm.
And my first ball of Ali was a house ball.
Oh.
And I wasn't able to recover. And so when Andre was in my group of four, the final four at Indisc, I always remember, and I said, okay, I want to try not to let this happen again. So Pinburg, I came in fifth. The World Championship IFPA in Toronto a couple of years ago, I came in fifth as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I could never break that top four. So I was always like, man, why can't I come in the top four in a major? Oh, I just want to be in the top four.
Yeah.
But as for wins, I did go on to win the IFPA Masters right after the Nationals. I guess now it's called the North American Championship. So one of those, I would say, would be my biggest win up until this past weekend.
Wow. And just out of curiosity, you won – I'm just trying to remember what you won for Maine. Did you win a pinball machine?
Yeah. So I won – I guess I won $500 in cash,
mm-hmm,
and a Munster's premium.
Oh, my God. That is the prettiest pinball machine on the planet.
Yeah.
Franchi did great work on that. I was going to ask you, do you own many pinball machines currently?
I own a few. I actually won an Alice Cooper machine down in Phoenix at Alice Cooperstown back in 2017. It was at his, I guess he owns a sports bar,
mm-hmm,
right near the baseball stadium down in Phoenix. And I had to play, it was a classic tournament. There were 12 games there with 11 classics. And I played Bob Matthews, who's a very good friend of mine, on the very last game of 300, which happens to be a bowling game. And I'm a big bowler. So, I say God has a sense of humor. And so I wound up winning on 300 to win the Alice Cooper machine. They wound up giving me the number one out of 500 machine.
Incredible. You have the number. Not even Alice Cooper himself has a higher number than you.
He told me, and Alice Cooper, he told me, and he's a really nice guy. He said, well, I'm going to take the number one machine. You can have the number two. And I said, that's fine with me. But when they shipped him out, my box said number one out of 500.
What? So. That is, well, thanks to Spooky Pinball. Thanks to Alice Cooper. That is so awesome.
Yes.
And some people might judge Alice Cooper, seeing him be like, the whole get up and the metal guy, and think he's like this hardcore guy that's maybe not like the most generous, but it's nice to hear that deep down inside, he's an entertainer. He's a genuinely nice guy.
He is. And he's a Christian man. And, he was just absolutely nice. Going back to the other machines that I have,
mm-hmm,
I've got a Twilight Zone. I really love the machines of the 90s. I've got a Twilight Zone and a Doctor Who. And one from the early 80s that I grew up playing is the first one I ever really remember playing, besides the Captain Fantastic that my parents had bought, was Xenon.
Oh, I love that. The sounds on that game are just incredible. It's got that cool tube.
They are. And I was able to pick up a new old stock playfield probably 13 years ago,
mm-hmm,
on eBay. It was a buy it now for $500.
Ooh.
Obviously the guy had no idea what he had. I picked up the new old stock playfield before I even had a Xenon. I had it clear coated right away,
mm-hmm,
and I still have it. I haven't put it in my Xenon yet. I'm looking for a really nice cabinet.
Right.
And I'd love a mint condition cabinet to put this in so that I have a mint condition Xenon.
Okay. Well, to all the pinball nerds out there listening, if you know anyone that has a beautiful Xenon cabinet, get a hold of Eric Stone. Well, you can always message me here, on our Facebook group for pinball nerds if you don't have him on Facebook. But that's so cool. So I know that you did a post today where you explained that at some point, your doctor had said that, to your parents when you were around four that you either didn't have great hand-eye coordination or they thought that getting something like a pinball machine would help. I wish my doctor had prescribed to my parents to get a pinball machine, because that would have made my life growing up even better. And I'd probably, I wouldn't be as good as you, but I think I would be a little better if I grew up with a pinball machine in my house, right? So how did that all work out?
Well, the thing is, I was I can't remember how old I was. I wasn't even a year old, but you know, I was a newborn or whatever. And the doctors had said, had told my parents that, because I was born 3 weeks early, my nervous system didn't develop completely yet. And they told, the doctor told my parents, well, he may have trouble with hand-eye coordination, you know, blah, blah, blah. And my parents actually took it upon themselves and thought, well, you know, maybe if we buy a pinball machine, then his hand-eye coordination, you know, will improve or will be good. Little did I know that because they did that, I am where I am now.
Wow, that is just, it was meant to be, I think, buddy. It was meant to be.
Right. There's so many kids nowadays that are playing so well. Alec, Colin Urban, Escher Lefkoff.
Jared was there.
Jay, you know, Jared August, you know.
Yep.
And I really think that if you start as a young kid, that you develop those skills at a different level than if you start when you're older. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, I totally agree with you. It's the same thing with a lot of the parts of your brain that are helpful for learning new skills are quicker to be adaptable when you're younger. It's the same thing with language and lots of other things, right?
Right, exactly.
I did want to mention bowling just for a second. I know you've bowled at least one or two perfect games before.
53.
Oh my God. So wait, are you like, is there some type of ranking for bowling? Like, are you a really high up ranked bowler as well?
I am. There's not a ranking like there is in pinball, but for a good part of 15 to 20 years, I've averaged over 230 in bowling.
Wow.
And you know, bowling, you need sponsors really to be on the PBA, to be professional. And, you know, with my job, I hadn't had the time to really travel, and you have to bowl, I don't know how many games it is a week, 30 to 60, you know, games of bowling a week. And the way I bowl my, I really kind of tear my arm apart when I'm bowling. So I just didn't see it feasible to try to be a professional bowler.
That's a lot of throwing, you know, like how heavy a ball do you normally throw? Like a 12, 13, 14 pound?
Oh, no, 16.
Oh my God. See that? Yeah. My arm's sore after two games of throwing the 12 pound. I was in a bowling league. I was never very good. I was in 5-pin. I don't even know if they have that there.
No.
And then up here, I tried to go bowling up on the East Coast of Canada, and they have these candlestick things. Have you seen these?
Oh yeah. I've seen those growing up in New Hampshire.
Okay. So you've seen them. People That's listening awesome. Right now are going, what? Because like 70% of my listeners are in the States and they're going candlesticks. Just Google it. You guys will see it. I would like to get back into bowling, but now that the bowling here is much different than where I was, you know, it's a little different, but would you say you get more pleasure from bowling if it's more just like of a hobby, or do you think you still enjoy pinball just a little bit more?
Oh no, definitely pinball. I always knew. the funny thing is, all the years I bowled, people would say, "Man, you know, you're a great bowler," and I said, "Yeah, but you know what? I really think I'm a better pinball player," and they'd look at me like I'm crazy. And but you know, like I said, in Salt Lake City, we really didn't have pinballs. So when I would go home to New Hampshire to visit my family, most of the time I would be at Fun Spot or Weir's Beach Arcades, if anybody knows Central New Hampshire, and I'd be playing pinball. And you know, my mother would always say, "You only come back here to go to Fun Spot," and I said, "No, I come back here to see you."
A little bit of both, right? You got to visit the parents, but it's nice to have Fun Spot right there. Like, how many games would they have there? Like, how many pinball, how many arcade, would you say?
They have, I believe they have around 650 games altogether.
What?
I'm telling you, this is the Guinness Book of World Record, biggest arcade in the world. They have, how many pinballs do they have? Maybe 40.
Wow.
Yeah, their pinball collection in the 90s used to be even more. They used to have probably 70 or so games.
Mm-hmm.
They have a couple EMs. They have many, 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 many solid states, mid to late 80s, Bally Williams. They only have a couple 90s, and all they have is that one Monopoly. So, you know, it'd really be nice if they would update their stuff. But you know how the trend of arcades are going right now. It's all about ticket redemption.
Yeah, and unfortunately.
So you always see a nice brand new $10,000 ticket redemption game that they're going to make $20,000 on, but you don't see a new pinball machine. That's the tough part.
Yeah. I mean, I think barcades are like picking up a little bit, you know what I mean? But like the family fun centers seem to revolve around the ticket redemption, unfortunately, because it feels a little bit like some of those games. Like I as an adult can go in there and I can get hooked on some of those machines and go, oh, I'm so close to winning. I'll keep trying. And half of those, it isn't even about skill. It's about luck. And that's unfortunate. Right. I'd like to see more pinball, of course. I was just curious, who are some of your other favorite competitive players? I know we mentioned the young players, but
before we go into that.
Yeah.
I spent my childhood winning tokens from FunSpot and tickets from FunSpot.
Okay.
So I actually can figure out some of the games where I can win, and I can figure out some of the games that are rigged that you can't win. My favorite game is called Frogger. Now, it's not the typical Frogger where you hit the button and the frog jumps, and then you hit the button again, the frog jumps.
Right.
This is a game where you hit the button one time,
mm-hmm.
and the frog endlessly goes until he either falls in the water or he makes it all the way until the end.
Right.
And if he makes it until the end, you win 500 tickets. Well, I memorized the pattern
of
Frogger, and I'm hitting it every 2 to 3 times up at FunSpot for 500 tickets each.
So there is some of those games that are definitely you can figure out. There was a game that I used to play that I would win the 500 on maybe one in 20 or 30 plays. And it was something to do with ice. And then all of a sudden the spin wheel would drop all the way down and you dropped one more coin in and you could usually hit the jackpot. Anyways, some of those games, you're right. You are able to figure them out. And especially, you know, an intelligent guy like you, that's hyper-focused, I'll say. We normally record in half an hour chunks, but I'm not even halfway through my questions. Is it cool if you stick with us for another segment?
Of course.
Awesome. Okay. We've got about a minute and a half here before this half an hour chunk is done. I'm just curious to know, who are some of your other favorite competitive players?
You know, I really like Robert Gagneau from Canada.
Good old Canadian. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, some of the players that I really have the utmost respect. I mean, Raymond Davidson, you know, winning 2 IFPA World Championships in a row.
Yeah, Ray Day's incredible.
You know, Keith Elwin, who, in my opinion, is, with his record, probably the greatest of all time.
Hey! We agree, we agree.
Yeah. You know, I have pretty much crowds from different parts of the country. I have my New York City crowd, Greg and Levy and Paul. You know, I got people that I'm friends with in Texas, Colin McAlpine. You know, just people in all different areas of the country. You know what I mean? So I love the fact that, you know, it's pretty much a pinball family. I have good friends in Pittsburgh. Chris Stevens, DJ Ryle's a really good friend of mine.
Uh-huh.
Fred Richardson, Lee Muscaritolo, if you know him. He lives in Florida now. He was ranked the number one player in the world back in the 80s.
Really?
And, you know, yeah. And these guys, you know, they lift me up. They build me up. They give me support. And everybody at the Pinball Asylum does as well. So, yeah, it's just a great community.
Awesome. We're just going to take a brief break here, but stick with me on the phone and we'll be back in a moment, Pinball Nerds. Welcome back, Pinball Nerds, to part 2 of Eric Stone joining the Pinball Nerds podcast. We were just talking about some of your favorite players, Eric. I'm wondering if you have a favorite designer or a couple favorite designers that you tend to favor, or you kind of like everybody.
Well, I definitely like Pat Lawler the most as a designer.
You're a Lawler fan,
games,
eh?
Yeah, some of the great games he's created in the 80s and 90s. And even, I haven't had much time on Willy Wonka yet, but
mm-hmm.
I've just always liked, his layouts.
I am a huge Lawler fan as well. I actually have the only Pat Lawler machine that I can afford, which is Roller Coaster Tycoon here. Some people don't like it, but growing up, I was a huge fan of the actual PC game, Roller Coaster Tycoon. I'm a huge roller coaster fanatic. You may have seen the video that I did where I did the top five things I love about Jurassic Park pinball while I was at Darien Lake Six Flags on a roller coaster last year. I don't know if you saw that one, but it's funny. I'll send it to you in a message if you haven't seen it yet. Pat Lawler is incredible. I also haven't played very much yet of Willy Wonka, but I'm excited to play a little bit more of it. Do you listen to many other pinball podcasts or do you watch a lot of live streaming on Twitch?
No, I don't listen to many podcasts. It just seems like my day is so filled up with weather and, stuff like that, whether mm-hmm. it's weather, bowling, or trying to get personal time in.
But, right.
It's very rare that I'm able to do that.
And so when I reached out to you, had you even heard of the Pinball Nerds podcast?
I've heard of it. I did. I have heard of it, but I hadn't listened.
Awesome. And before you said yes to coming on the show, you obviously went and listened to all 323 episodes, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Well, you know what? I'm really glad that you maybe hadn't heard us in the first few months, because it took me a little while to get confident enough to even interview like local friends in just my buddy who I would just talk to on a Monday night at pinball. And eventually, last year at Pinburg, I kind of did my first big interview with Jack Danger, of course, of Dead Flip. And, even earlier this week, I got to have a really nice chat with Rudy Soup, the face of pinball from Buffalo Pinball, of course. So I'm getting more comfortable doing it, but I'm not going to lie. I was a little nervous all day knowing that I was going to talk to the number 10 player in the world who just won the Open Championship. How much do you think your ranking will go up after these all these whoppers go in from these three huge events?
You know, it's funny. Bob Matthews is a good friend of mine.
Mm-hmm.
He always calculates the whoppers and the points.
Right.
And I'll get a text from him when I won Free Play Florida a few months ago.
Mm-hmm.
And Bob said, "That's going to be just enough points so you can play in the Epstein Cup in Fort Myers. You're going to have just enough points so that you're going to make the circuit finals in Chicago." So before I even said a word,
right,
Bob Matthews comes up and he said, "Well, just so you know, there's going to be a lot of whoppers here. I estimate that you're going to be over 1,000 and you're going to be in third place." And I'm thinking, okay, Bob, thanks very much. I appreciate it.
Oh, my God. So you might be like a top three dude now.
I was actually, before I started working at Fox,
mm-hmm.
my ranking was number three in the world. That was back in November of 2018.
See, that would have been just, November. I think I started the podcast in October. I remember you being fourth, but I didn't even know you were third. So you're going to be taking back your spot on the podium again. And now with it being 2020, do you have any goals? I mean, third's incredible. Are you wanting to attempt to get, I know you have a full-time job and you play bowling like a lot and you play tons of pinball. So you don't have that much time, but do you have aspirations of wanting to try to take over the first or second, or not really?
Yeah, it would be nice, but it's just with my work schedule, and I work weekends. My typical shift is Wednesday through Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
So if I were to play any kind of pinball, I have to take time off.
Right.
And so I think since I started working, my ranking dropped all the way to like 14th or 15th,
Mm-hmm.
And I told everybody, I told my friends and people that I'm, that I play pinball. I said, my ranking's going to go down because I just can't get to these tournaments.
Mm-hmm.
And as nice as it would be, if I was retired, and I played, you know, all these circuit events. I only played, you know, 4 circuit events last year.
Right.
Then, you know, maybe I'd be able to try to push for number one, but you know, I would pretty much have to win every single tournament that I go to this year if I wanted to be number one.
Right. And that's going to be substantially harder at something like Pinburg because you've got 900 incredible or like 1,000 incredible players, however many players are going to go this year. Right. So, and of course, I'm sure you'll be able to, you know, most likely go to finals. But then once you get there, like you said, I think golf is the perfect analogy because even when Tiger Woods was in his prime and he was winning like 3 majors a year, he still wasn't winning every other tournament he was in. Like he was, you know, he would be up there typically. But like you said, it's just once you've played for that many days with players that good, it does come down to there will be a little bit of luck involved in pinball. There just always is.
Definitely. Especially with the classic games.
Right. Right. Where you can have 2 house balls. Right. So.
Yep. Exactly.
Yeah. Now, something I didn't chat about a little bit before is I noticed that you really get like this laser focus kind of just you really almost tune out. It seems like you're almost in your own world when you're playing one of those balls where it really matters. Do you kind of do that on purpose or is that just something that happens?
boy, I don't really know. I know that. You know, when I start getting into the game and I start, you know, singing the music and start copying what the game is saying, then that tends to be when I play the best. My first ball on Tomcat, I didn't really, I didn't do that. And the first ball was pretty bad. The second ball, I think you could hear it on the Twitch stream that that I was kind of singing the theme song. And I kind of do the Josh Sharp you know, no, you know, like yelling a little bit at the game as I'm playing.
You're a little animated sometimes, yes.
Which, you know, Josh and Zach, you know, 2 other great people, you know, in the pinball community.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know what it takes for me to get that focused. But when I want something and when I can almost taste it and I know the strategy, I know the shots I need to make. And if I can, you know, make them and not miss them with, you know, make them without draining, then, you know, then I'm able to do it.
And it seems like you're able to do it. Like, correct me if I'm wrong, but I have never noticed you don't really wear headphones or music when you play.
Right.
And like, other than that, like I thought that you would be out there practicing all the time, but like what you were saying is that you don't actually get to play that often. So what do you do to actually learn the rules for all these machines you've never played before?
So, you know, there's one thing when it comes to rules, and then there's another thing when it comes to strategy.
Right.
And I don't like just looking at a rule sheet and, you know, saying, okay, well, you know, Black Knight Sword of Rage, you know, you hit the lock shot, you hit this shot 3 times, you get your mode going. I like to see what really good players do. And if I can see what they do, I think I can copy what they're doing.
Mm.
And, you know, sometimes I can copy them better. I think that's why I do really well in the classic games, because the strategy and the rule set are a lot more simple.
Right.
And so you know what you're going for. And, you know, like even on Scared Stiff, I played a game with Raymond. Okay. Mm-hmm. And Raymond had a ball cradled up on the left flipper in multi-ball, and he was constantly shooting the left ramp with the right flipper over and over. Now, with that game, you know, the jackpots are alternating. So I'll try to get them, you know, I'll try to go back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And Escher did a great job doing that when we were playing that game. And I'm like, why is Raymond doing that? Well, it's safe points. It starts out at 50,000, 100, 150, and it goes up to, I think, like 400, 450,000. So he's got no danger of losing both of his balls.
Right.
And as long as he's repeating things, he's getting 300,000 and 400,000 every shot. And anybody that knows how I play pinball, the games that you chop wood, where you continuously shoot the same shot over and over, that would typically bore someone.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the kind of games that I excel at.
Right.
Rescue 911 was the perfect example. I mean, you get multi-ball and you shoot that shot at the top and you get your jackpots to 100 million and you keep trapping up, you keep shooting the ramp and you keep trapping and you keep shooting the jackpot. I've never even seen a Rescue 911 before this tournament.
Are you serious?
I had no clue what the heck to do. And I played the one that was on the floor and those jackpots went to 300 million. Well, I wound up rolling it over 11 billion.
Oof.
And I thought, oh, that's all you have to do. It's a chopping wood game. That's perfect for me. And so I don't know how we got started on all this, but those are the type of games that I'll just, you know, I'll have the stamina to just keep doing the same boring thing over and over until I blow it out of the water.
And I do remember when you were playing on Scared Stiff, I'm not sure if one of the commentators said it or if it was something I thought to myself, but I was like, no, he's doing what Raymond Davidson was doing. But like you were like repeatedly just, you know, doing it. And it's like you said, it was very, very, very safe because you have one or two balls cradled in the left. And if for some reason you don't get all the way up that ramp, you can use one of the other balls to simply hit that ball away anyways. And so, yeah, that was different to see because, of course, anytime I played Scared Stiff, I've tried to, you know, rotate the different ramps out, right? Now,
right.
The big difference is between yourself and many of the other people you were playing with there in finals at Indisc and players like myself that are ranked, you know, maybe outside of the top 1,000 or top 2,000, we might know the strategy, but being able to actually do it, like, I knew that strategy from 911, but, like, I seriously think the last time I played 911 in a tournament, I got like the lowest score there because it was playing brutal and I hadn't practiced it. And it's one thing knowing what to do and it's a whole other thing doing it. So I was shocked to hear you got 11 billion. Was that in qualifications or is that during finals?
No. That was on the one on the floor.
Oh, okay. Now, not in the tourney.
Now those jackpots were set up to 300 million max. The one in qualifying was only set to 100 million.
Oh, okay. So much harder to...
Right.
Yeah.
I believe my score was just under 3 billion.
Wow.
For my qualifying ticket. So, and again, that's, you know, playing that particular one for the first time or second time.
Still incredible. Still just incredible. Did you, and I'm just assuming here, I guess I have IFPA open. I could look here. Yeah. I was going to say you probably qualified top in Florida. It looks like you have.
Yeah.
Who do you think's going to, you know, you don't have to throw out a name if you don't want to, but I'm just curious, who do you think is going to really make it tough on you to win Florida again on Saturday?
Well, if you've heard of Nick Mueller,
yes,
he came in second in the Nationals last year.
Okay.
And Zach Sharp wound up beating him in the last round. He is, he's a very, very, very good pinball player. You know, Bob Matthews is actually coming from California, and he's going to be playing in the States as well.
He is?
Yeah, yeah. He's going to be playing in Florida. His wife has a conference in Orlando.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the venue is pretty close to there. You know, Jeff Palmer's a really good Florida pinball player. Sebastian Bobbio is a good one as well. And neither one of those really travel all that much. I know Sebastian sometimes goes over to Europe and plays the European pinball championships.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you got a new and upcoming kid named Alex Marino, who that's his home court. And I know how hard it is to play people at their home court, just like it is for them to play me. You know, like a fun spot. So, I mean, there are several people out there, and I know some people have been coming up to me and saying, wow, you won the world championship, you know, the state tournament ought to be easy. And I'm thinking, yeah, right. Anything can happen on any given day.
Especially, like you said, if there's a couple players who that location is their home location, so they know exactly where every feed goes, exactly how much power every flipper has, and just those little nuances of each machine can really help.
Oh, yeah, big time.
So will you be doing, do you know most of the machines there, or are you kind of doing some studying this week as well?
No, they have they have a practice session that I'm going to go to Friday night for a couple hours.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe an hour on Saturday morning. They're constantly swapping out games. So I'll look Friday night. They have a lot of games to choose from. So, you know, I'll be able to see what they have there Friday night. And if I need to, you know, go back to where I'm staying and look at a couple of YouTube videos, you know, I kind of worry that they may have that. I'm pretty sure they have the Elvira and the Stranger Things pinball, and I don't really have much time on either one of those. That's another thing. We don't really get in the Fort Myers area.
Mm-hmm.
We don't really get like the new machines. I usually have to go to a tournament if I want to play the newer games. And so, you know, it makes it difficult to try to keep up with all the code updates. I wish that once they made a game, it just stayed that way. It would make life so much easier for me.
Yeah, because you've got to learn, like, between, you know, Pinburg and obviously, like, huge tournaments like Indisc and Free Play Florida and then State Finals. And just between all of those, you know, even if it's been 2 months, you could have had 4 or 5 machines with code updates. And here you had one strategy, and maybe with the new code update, there's a more lucrative way to do it. And if you want to stay in the top 3 pinball players on the frickin' planet in the galaxy, you know, you've got to, like, you got to stay on top of that. What did you think of Stranger Things if you got to play it there at Indisc?
I only played it one time. Mm-hmm. You know, it seemed like kind of like an Attack from Mars type. With an almost impossible shot in the middle to try to get the ball in his mouth.
The Demogorgon shot. If you're calling it impossible, it must be hard.
I don't know. I don't even know if I played a whole game. I think I played a couple balls of it,
mm-hmm.
and I was up on a qualifying game. So, you know, I don't really know much about it. Same thing with Elvira.
Mm-hmm.
Elvira seems rather simple.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't seem like there's all that much to it. Like, you know, Jurassic Park, there's a lot involved in that game.
Right. What do you think of Jurassic Park? Was that, are you similar to many people saying they believe that was their favorite game of 2019 or?
You know, I liked the game. I didn't really, I had access to it for a short time.
Mm-hmm.
The Raptor target on it didn't work.
Oh.
And so I didn't even know about Raptor multiball until a friend of mine says, hey, I think there's supposed to be some sort of multiball in the Raptor target.
Right.
And he's saying, I don't think it. So then I told the guy who owns the game and he said, oh yeah, I guess so. And so he wound up fixing it and I was able to play a couple games with it. But I mean, I like the game. I don't know. I still think I like Iron Maiden more.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew if it was something that Keith Elwin had his hands on, that it would be a pretty darn, you know, good machine.
Right.
I do like Jurassic Park, but I like, you know, maybe when I understand Jurassic Park a little bit more, you know, then I'll appreciate it like Iron Maiden. Because I got tons of time in on Iron Maiden. And the more time I got in on the game, the more I really appreciated it. So I think I just need a little more time on it.
Yeah. And I mean, Iron Maiden is a terrific machine. So, you know, there is people out there who staunchly are like, no, Iron Maiden's better. No, Jurassic Park better. Here's what we know. They're both really rad games. They're both fun shooters. They both have very balanced, fair rule sets. They're both great tournament games. And I think we're going to see some more incredible games coming from Keith Elwin as these things keep happening. Now, with all of these awesome competitive pinball players like Bowen Cairns and Keith Elwin and even like Escher, I think now is helping doing some play testing. You know, did you ever think maybe, now you have a whole career obviously on television for gosh sakes, but I mean, I don't know, would you ever entertain something like that? Like working with a pinball company, or you think you just want to leave pinball as your hobby and your fun thing and not turn it into a work thing?
You really never know where life's going to bring you.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I've done this for quite a long time. And I'm still, you know, waiting for my big break in TD, you know, meteorology. Mm-hmm. I'm still, you know, I'm 44 now, and I'm in a medium-sized market. you know. And, you know, my goal is to, you know, be a successful meteorologist in a big market.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if that doesn't happen, something in the pinball industry presents itself to me. And, you know, it seems like it could be a really good thing. Then, yeah, I mean, you know, I'd be open to that. So I guess we'll just see what direction life goes, you know?
Well, now that I know a lot of industry insiders do listen to my show, I don't get, you know, as many listens as quite a few of the other ones out there, which is why my tagline is your fifth favorite pinball podcast. Kind of a little joke from Flight of the Conchords, where like they're the seventh most popular ukulele band from New Zealand or whatever, right? So kind of a little... I started this more of as a tongue-in-cheek thing that I thought would be more of a blog, just talking about my local games. I had no clue I would eventually grow to get the soon-to-be third top-ranked pinball player on the planet on. But when I heard you talk about how, you know, you'd still like to eventually grow possibly to a larger market, that reminds me of one of my favorite shows. I know I mentioned this earlier when I was talking to you when you were still out at Indisc, but of course, Bill Murray's character in Groundhog Day has a similar issue. He's like, I'm in this medium-sized market, but I'd really like to break out and get, you know, become, go in one of the larger, like more of a national, you know, program or something like that. And I don't know, maybe just the Canadian weatherman up here, they're not as talented or something, but if you were to move to Canada, I think you'd be our top guy because you're entertaining and fun to watch. And I love all your clips that you post. So.
Well, you know, I appreciate it. And, you know, working here has really allowed me to show more personality. You know, other places that I've worked, it was more, you know, about the meat and potatoes of the weather forecast. But working here, I don't have any reason not to show, you know, my personality. And they really love that. And they really embrace, you know, the whole pinball thing. You know, they had the story of me winning, you know, the world championship before I even got back to Fort Myers.
Wow.
On the news. And I'm thinking, well, how the heck did you guys know? And
they were watching. You
know, someone emailed the station and said, hey, you know, your meteorologist just did this. Next thing you know, it's on TV. And I got people telling me they saw me on TV and I wasn't even in, you know, back in Fort Myers yet.
Wow, that's so cool. And I know that one time, I think you mentioned you even got to do some anchoring.
Oh, you know, I've done it all here. Mm-hmm. So before coming to Fox, I was strictly, you know, forecaster, meteorologist, you know, I do the graphics and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But boy, I've done live reporting, a lot of live reporting.
Yeah.
I've kicked field goals at high schools during the high school football season. The first one I kicked almost hit a cheerleader in the head. Luckily she got out of the way. And I don't know if that video went viral. You know, I'm sure you could find it somewhere. I did, you know, I've anchored a few stories, not much, but just a few. I did some editing. I've done some like interviewing as a reporter would do.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like I do a lot of different things here, which in the beginning I was a little nervous about because
right.
All I've ever done is weather. But because I'm able to do so many different things, it shows my personality more. And, you know, my boss could see that in me when I first started. And I didn't really see it right away. But now that I've been doing it for, you know, here for over a year, you know, I'm pretty comfortable with what I do now. And, you know, if they tell me, hey, you know, go to some festival and just start talking to the general public and make it fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I say, okay, that's fine. Not a problem. And I'll find somebody else. Say, hey, you want to be on TV or, you know, talk to little kids and little kids get all excited and say, you know, saying, oh, I'm going to be on TV, you know? And so you just have a good time with it. Kind of like the Al Roker, but on a much smaller level.
Oh,
if you know who Al
Roker is. Oh, I love Al Roker. Come on. He's the best. He's because he kind of started, didn't he start by doing the weather and then he sort of worked into like a regular host?
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah. That is so cool. I guess I've only got a couple minutes left here and I know that you've got to do another forecast tonight. So you're going to be back live
right.
to air. But I'm just curious, have you done many other pinball podcasts?
No. My friend Dave O'Neill does, I think it's called, it might be called the Classic Pinball Podcast. He's up there in Massachusetts. I met him back in 1999 at Fun Spot.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he's a real good friend of mine. He's actually named Dr. Dave. He restores machines. And
yes.
He just had something that I posted on my Facebook, the APC in Boston, did a piece on him. So besides that, Jeff Teolis, of course, everyone knows. He's another nice guy, good friend of mine. The pinball profile.
Yeah, another nice Canadian.
Yep. I was on his podcast right after I won the Nationals back
yes.
in 2017.
I knew that, but.
Yep. So you're going to be the third one.
Oh, my God. Well, thank you so much. And it was, you know, when I messaged you, I thought, I've never even messaged the guy before. I haven't got to meet him in real life. I'm pretty sure I saw you walk by once or twice at Pinburg, but I was a little too nervous to go up and be like, hi, I'm not worthy.
Oh, no, nothing like that. I mean, you know, I'm in the public eye all the time.
Yeah.
I love when people come up to me at a restaurant and say, hey, what's the weather going to be this weekend?
Do you really?
Oh, yeah. I don't mind it at all. And I'm a talker, as you know. Now you know.
Yes. No, I suspected as much, but I also see you kind of getting really, really into it and focused. And I feel like, you know, at a certain point in the tournament and finals, you probably aren't. You're kind of like holding everything in yourself, right? But I could definitely see this year at Pinburg, I will promise to come up and say hello, shake your hand. And
cool.
I don't know if you're not comfortable doing, you know, any type of bet, let me know. But the last two gentlemen I've talked to Pinburg about, we've done just a for fun bet. So here was an option we could do. We don't have to do it for any type of money or anything like that. But I thought if you gave me a little bit of a handicap, I did barely qualify for A last year, probably won't do it this year. I mean, I'm ranked 2200th in the world and you're soon to be number 3. So if you'd like, and you don't even have to respond now, you can always message me later. But if you'd like, I'd like to challenge you to a bet. I would like a 200 spot handicap. And well, come on, I'm probably not going to make it to A. If you gave me a 200 spot handicap,
like bowling, how many pins do I have to give you?
Exactly. Well, in bowling, you'd have to give me, well, I think my average was like 143 back in the day. So you'd have to give me a lot more in bowling. But I was wondering if you wanted to do like a bet where whomever lost had to wear a t-shirt of the other guy's choice on one of the days at Pinburg. It doesn't have to be on your day when you're in finals on stage. I'm not going to lie. I'd probably make you wear a Pinball Nerds podcast shirt, but you'd get to keep the shirt in case you don't already have one. So, I don't know. Would you, do you think 200's 150?
You made the A last year. So you finished in the top 40. And I don't know where I was at. I didn't do so hot. I didn't play that Willy Wonka game, and I didn't know that game. I think I was like 19 or 20.
So I didn't make A finals. I only made A division. I finished 193rd.
Oh.
I just made A. I did not make A finals. I am a straight up C player. Let's just say
right.
150 spots. How about that?
All right. We'll do 150 spots.
All right.
And you know what? I'm not going to make you wear a shirt, but anybody that knows me knows how much I like iced tea.
Okay.
All you gotta do is buy me an iced tea. It's like $2.
Dude, I got your iced tea the entire Pinburg.
Oh, absolutely. I love it.
Awesome, buddy. Well, we're down to 1 minute here. Is there any like local spots? I know you mentioned a lot that you wanted to give a shout out to, or anyone you may have forgot about that you wanted to give a shout out to, or anything else you wanted to say as we're finishing up here?
Well, you know, we've got the World Championship in the Pinball Asylum.
Mm-hmm.
And that's coming the end of May for IFPA 17. So anyone that wants more information, feel free to add me on Facebook, add my meteorologist Eric Stone page.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you're just big into weather and, you know, you want to follow 85-degree weather when it's 30 below up in Canada.
You son of a gun. No, I'm just kidding. Eric, it was great to chat with you. Stay on the phone just for a second here. Unless you have to go, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to play you out with a little bit of, I'd like to try to find some music that I feel like relates to where the person's from. And I know you're not originally from Florida, but when I typed into Google, best bands from Florida. Tom Petty came up. So until next time, pinball nerds, remember to eat, sleep, and breathe Eric Stone pinball.
She's a good girl, loves her mom, loves Jesus, in America too.